So yes, I would like to get a sense from you of what are the kinds of biomedical projects that you are, first of all, working on internally, and second of all, those that you are working on in collaboration with external partners. I spoke with George Hripsack, who's one of the folks who was awarded a grant under the Genome-Wide Association Studies program, and I know there was others involved in that, but there are other programs as well. So just trying to get a sense of, what's the scope of activity here, who's involved, what kinds of things they're doing, what are the kinds of things that Microsoft Research brings to the table in terms of helping these folks out with their computational and data management challenges, and what are the kinds of things that Microsoft, learns from these engagements as well? What do we get out of it?
Just to kind of start out, the way in which we or the different programs that we have inside of external research are they run the gamut of everything from the devices and mobility space for home health care and elder care, all the way through genome-wide association studies. So it's really, in the sense for us, it's almost all the way from bench to bedside are the types of different projects that we fund. Because we're a software company, we're going to focus in on the IT portions of it, and there's very specific reasons for us to do that. These are often the parts that don't get funded elsewhere or only get funded sparsely. So we're sort of trying to fill in the funding gaps. So the whole purpose of us going into doing medical funding in general was to sort of fill in those gaps.
And why do you think those gaps exist?
Well, I believe that it's a misperception by a lot of the funding agencies that either something doesn't fall into their area or that it's not as important as the actual research being done. The problem is that you really cannot do, and this is really the fundamental key for us funding this area, you cannot do medical research without computing. I mean, you just really can't do it.
Yeah, of course not.
So areas that we funded, for instance, we had an RFP. The biggest RFP that we ran this year was actually Cell Phone as a Platform for Healthcare, and that was $1.4 million towards trying to reach rural and underserved communities through these retro technologies of, television sets and cell phones, because those are the things that are ubiquitous.
Oh yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've in another context, I've interviewed a fellow named Joel Salonicchio, who you may or may not have heard of, but he got recently a MacArthur grant for a project to use handheld devices in the third world for field surveys, data collection out in the field. It's it's a huge opportunity, but as you say, it's the sort of retro technology that doesn't really make people's eyes light up in Silicon Valley because they just don't see the opportunity the same way.
Yeah, it's true that they don't. But interestingly, we've got a lot of researchers in-house, whether we're talking about that particular situation or we're talking about the genomics, who have a keen interest in working in these areas. So, for example, what we did was in conjunction with a couple of the people who were winners of that award, we gave them phone pluses. And a phone plus is a technology that was developed in Microsoft Research Asia. And what it is a phone sits in a cradle. It's got RGB out to the television set. And then it also has USB input ports for mouse, keyboard, etc. So basically, it turns your cell phone into the server for you to work like it's a PC. Now, the beauty of this is you hook that up to a microscopy device that can actually do instant visualization of the blood cells and determine whether or not somebody has malaria and display that on a television screen. You've just now set up a lab for doing microscopy out anywhere in the world where you have a TV and a cell phone.
Who are the folks that were working on that project?
Eric Chang is the general manager responsible for that particular area. He's in Microsoft Research Asia. But another example of that is something we did with Washington University in St. Louis. They're developing low-cost ultrasound probes. Same thing. They're USB out, and they're designed to work with laptops. But now, because of Phone Plus, you can actually plug it into this little cradle, and you now have an ultrasound booth anywhere in the world, right? Anywhere that you've got, power, a television set, and a cell phone. You even set the different levels for the ultrasound device on the cell phone itself. It's just an amazing technology. But see, that's an example of where Microsoft Research has developed a technology that facilitates this, providing healthcare to rural communities.
Yeah.
Although it wasn't initially designed that way. It was actually initially designed for education. But what I did is I kind of took it and twisted it and said, hey, I think that would be really good for the cell phone as a platform for healthcare projects. And I got them to give me a bunch of phones and these cradles and such, and started sending it out to the researchers who had won the different awards for the RFP that I ran this year.
This would be very interesting to follow up on. So what kinds of things have you heard back from them?
So far, the experience has been very good. Unfortunately, because we've only funded them 6 months ago, you know, we're not going to be getting the results back probably until sometime next year. But I have actually seen a demo with the Phone Plus and the ultrasound unit already working. So that was very impressive. WashU is really ahead of, I would say, the game with regards to a lot of the different projects. And for them to demo it for me after, you know, and they'd only had it for a few weeks before I actually sent them. They'd already been working on the cell phone version of it. But then to get it working on this phone that sits in the cradle, it was really amazing. It was amazing to see it work on a television set. It was just really incredible.
So the folks that you funded to do these things, are they bringing their own technical chops to the table to be able to extend these devices, or are you working with them and providing some support? How does that tend to work?
Well, we do expect them to bring something to the table, the researchers themselves, right? Mm-hmm. That's the ones who win the awards, you know, they have superior technology. We had 145 people actually submit to the cell phone as a platform for healthcare. Mm-hmm. And we had originally only planned to fund $1 million worth, so that was about 10 projects. But we had to extend it to $1.4 million because what we wanted to do is we wanted to get it to 10% acceptance rate. But even 10% acceptance rate for us generally is fairly low. Usually our acceptance rates for the various RFPs are much higher than that. But we just were bombarded with people trying to come up with solutions for this space. Hmm. And it was disappointing that we could even only do 14, because when I looked back through the proposals, I would say 85 of them were fundable.
Hmm.
I mean, they were on, 85 of them were on the bubble.
Hmm.
Is that not terrible? I mean...
It's a good problem. It's a good problem to have, right?
You really wish you could do more.
Yeah, yeah.
With regards, I know you have talked to George at Columbia with regards to the GWAS, but I'd like to sort of head in that direction with regards to your other question about some of the other things that we bring to the table. When I went looking for people inside of Microsoft Research for collaborators, what I learned was that there's a plethora of them. It's kind of surprising that we hadn't been funding this area before, and it's no surprise to me now that it's become a strong pillar of funding for our organization. In fact, we've trimmed out a lot of the other programs, and we're going to be focusing a lot on the healthcare space this time around. And partly that was because when I went hunting for people to collaborate, I'd had no trouble at all. I had more collaborators than anybody else, and I was new to the team, and that was because people consider healthcare the killer application for what they're working on. But we also had a very rich group. You know, we have a couple of MD PhDs working here, Eric Horvitz and David Heckerman.
Yep.
And David does a lot of work in, you know, the development of vaccines for HIV and malaria. But he's branching out now into this GWAS area. And so he's been looking at Lou Gehrig's disease because I've got a collaboration working with him and Benaroya Institute.
We should define the term probably for people who are not familiar with genome-wide association studies.
Oh, sure. Genome-wide association studies is, you know, being able to look across the genome to find out if there are particular genes that are implicated in disease. That's one side of it. Another side of it is also being able to look across the genome to see if they react differently to different pharmaceutical agents.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to put it in the simplest terms, I would say that genome-wide association studies are really the thing that's going to deliver on being able to provide personalized medicine for all of us in the future.
Exactly, because it's a scan of an individual's complete genome looking for markers and correlations.
Absolutely, right. That's correct. That's what that's about.
Yep.
So I believe it will really deliver on personalized medicine for the masses. And the thing is, you know, we're looking at this already. It's happening already, right? We've got 23andMe popping up, Navigenics. You know, people are going to start using their genomic information to start making informed decisions about the type of health care that they receive. And they're going to be taking that to their doctor and assuming that, you know, that they'll be able to work with that. And so what we need to do is push the IT of this down so that now doctors have access to the information and know how to utilize this information. But right now, that's the gap. That's the clinical gap between, you know, the research that's taking place in this area and actual doctors who are performing the services needed.
In this case, you've funded, I think, about a half a dozen different individuals to do various aspects of this GWAS research.
Yeah, very different.
You know, what do you plan to get out of it, right, and what will result from that?
Well, the thing about running an RFP is, so it was a new area for us as an organization. Microsoft Research is what I'm referring to right now. So, you know, Microsoft Research has been dabbling in genomics for a while, but it was really what we wanted to do was cast a wide net and find out what was going on out there and find out if there were potential collaborations that we could take from there. So the first thing when you run an RFP is literally you're casting a net trying to find out what's the research and what are the areas that people are working in and how can we facilitate those people for future collaborations. The next phase is when you then say, okay, here are people that are working in important areas that we'd like to work with, and then you form these strategic collaborations with them to take that research to the next level. And the thing is, we bring a lot of resources to bear on this space, like the MS Computational Biology tools that we have published out on CodePlex, open source. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have our own things that we're bringing to bear. But the other thing that we bring to bear is we have a very deep knowledge of machine learning and knowledge representation and a variety of researchers who've been working in just general fields who are now starting to turn their attention to the fields of genomics. And for you know, a couple of examples of those that are new would be Jonathan Wynn and also Christopher Bishop, who literally wrote the book on machine learning and pattern recognition. And you can buy his book on Amazon.
I think that this is a pattern that I'm seeing again and again in these external partnerships, which is that there are, as you say, in really every area of science now, scientists who are necessarily becoming computational in the work that they do. It's just the nature of the beast. But, you know, they don't necessarily possess sort of deep domain expertise in, you know, either algorithms or data analysis and manipulation. And there are lots of people at Microsoft who are very deep in those areas who can effectively partner with these folks to move things forward.
Right. And not only that, I mean, it's not just the fact that we have these great underlying technologies, these analysis and infrastructure technologies, but we also have the human-computer interaction technologies that can make it usable for the people who are clinicians and who are the actual end users of it, or even the public themselves, right? So we've got a lot of people doing interesting work, and how do you make something more understandable? You know, how do you do machine translation across sex, age, status, you know, education? So there's a lot of different barriers. I mean, it's the same type of machine learning problem that you have with regards to going across language. You have to translate between the two languages. Well, you even have to translate between different cultures and things like that. You have to handle these different demographics of the public.
So say a little bit about what you learn as a result of these collaborations. You know, what comes back to Microsoft and what is Microsoft able to do with what it learns from these collaborations?
Well, our overall goal is to facilitate time to discovery, right? I mean, that's ultimately the goal of external research. And to do so in a way that extends the arm of Microsoft research. The things that we learn from these are places that are good to start moving in directions. You know, we have a publishing and tenure track promotion inside of Microsoft Research just as similar as they do in academia. So if we can make our researchers more effective on their reaching their goals of, you know, publishing papers in Science and Nature, that's a fabulous thing. We've facilitated them and extended their reach. But the other thing is there's a bit of corporate responsibility in here as well, right? Microsoft is a company, you know, investing in areas that are important for the future. So, you know, the pillars that we've decided on, you know, are, you know, and we've even done this through running RFPs. We've actually learned the areas that are important to invest in long-term for corporate responsibility. And I think the other thing that we learn is it's important for us as a company to keep abreast of the times and the things that are taking place. And so if for us to be technology leaders, we learn the areas that we need to maybe incorporate and do tech transfer into our products as well. So I would say it's really those three things, you know, extending the arm of research and you know, enabling our researchers to be more effective and also keeping abreast of the times.
So I guess it's early days to talk about tech transfer from the biomedical stuff into products because it's a relatively new part of external research. But I would imagine that one obvious outcome will be related to the kinds of devices that are going to be part of the Health Vault program as they start to exist in people's homes and as there starts to be this notion of, you know, sensors and devices that measure people's, biomedical characteristics and starts to transmit that data back to the cloud, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the more that we invest in that space in developing applications and different types of sensors that can actually be put into Health Vault, the more we're enabling them. We're actually enabling them to have a richer offering, right? So you're absolutely right. That's an important tech transfer. But the other thing is we also feel that we're enabling the public to be more knowledgeable about their own healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a common goal that we share with the Health Solutions Group and Peter Neupert's organization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have other goals as well. So, for instance, they have the Health Vault. They have Amalga, which is the more of the clinical side. And then they also have a project that's targeted at researchers, you know, trying to take people all the way through the literature search through the drug discovery process. So,
yeah.
We're working in conjunction with that. If you think about one of the projects that we funded under the Genome-Wide Association study, it was a system that was specifically designed to predict possible adverse drug reactions based on genome-wide association studies. So that's something that can be, you know, facilitatory to the research arm of it. And then the Columbia project, George, who you already spoke with him, I mean, that he actually is running his system for helping tools, creating tools for researchers to integrate clinical information into the genetic analysis.
Right.
So George's project is actually being built on top of Amalga. So there's a lot of different ways in which we hit across the Health Solutions Group. So, but yeah, we don't hit them on all of their fronts, and that's not unplanned, because when I was starting to put together the initiative, I met with Peter Neupert back when he had 8 people in this organization, and I interviewed him to try and find out what areas we should be investing in for healthcare. I also had gone out into the field, and I'd gone to various medical schools and biomedical computing programs, and talked with various people there to find out what they were investing in as well. And then I tried to identify areas that would actually be relevant to both Microsoft Research and the Health Solutions Group. So it's not just serendipity at work there.
Right. So your own background is more in bioinformatics than in the clinical realm, right?
My background actually is in more of medicine. I come from the biomedical computing group.
Okay.
My PhD, I had to form a multidisciplinary committee because the school where I was at didn't have a PhD program for this. They do now. In fact, they just started it last fall at University of Arizona, but they didn't have it when I was there. So I had to form a multidisciplinary committee to get a machine learning towards healthcare type of PhD. And with computational linguistics thrown in, it was tough, but it was worth it.
So natural language processing was part of your purview as a student?
Yeah, absolutely. And although the systems that I developed were much more broadly utilized by different organizations, in fact, for scanning through, looking for terrorist activity, so the Homeland Security has a copy of some of the code that I developed, but it was initially developed for the National Library of Medicine to scan through unstructured text to identify keywords for indexers, and also to create smaller indices so that you can actually search faster and more accurately for publications in PubMed and in CancerLit and all of the other types of digital libraries at the National Library of Medicine. But you can see there were further implications. In fact, it's been used by the Department of Justice to, as well as a system for trying to make correlations between different police reports.
Hmm.
So it's a generic technology. It's just that my piece of it was targeted towards healthcare, and my background and interests have always been in the healthcare space. So I've always pushed that direction, but other people have realized it for, you know, one of these facilitatory technologies that could be utilized elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So are there other projects that we haven't mentioned that you want to get into this?
Well, I think that we've covered the two major ones, and I see us really investing long-term, you know, in this devices, sensors, body sensor networks, ubiquitous computing, and pervasive computing, these types of technologies. That's going to be a fundamental theme for us going forward from here, because it's been one of the more successful areas that we've made investments in. But I also see us keeping a strong eye on the omicses, well, proteomics, genomics, metabolomics, you name it, all the omicses. We're going to be continuing to invest in that space as well going forward. So those were really the key ones. I think the third important area, I don't know if it's going to be a short term or a longer term, I suspect it's going to be a little bit longer term, is to address the other thing that we talked about, which I don't have an RFP in, which is this sort of machine translation for people to be able to understand healthcare documents. So if the average person cannot go out on Medline and read one of the literature on their particular disorder. People know that they have Lou Gehrig's disease, but maybe they don't know that they have amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Right? So
it is amazing, though, how much context people can assemble for themselves when they are under the pressure of intense need.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But it would be better if we could find these sort of facilitatory interfaces that would enable people to more readily access that information, readily access and understand and interpret that information. Because it's really there's a lot of information out there. In fact, there's really information overload for them. And if we could make it a little bit easier for them, I think that would be very valuable.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. How much of that is going to be a machine translation problem, and how much of that is going to be kind of a crowdsourcing solution where various kinds of experts at various levels are able to translate for one another in a kind of a social way? I think probably both will happen.
Yeah, one of the other areas I think that's important, and I was a bit disappointed when we ran our GWAS RFP that we didn't get anything concrete in this area, which was data visualization for genome-wide association studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is because, it's such a hard problem, right? Genome-wide association studies are computationally challenging as it is. There's a lot of data that gets generated through the process of running through one of these GWAS studies. And then visualizing it. So now you're adding yet another level of computational complexity such that it's already not real time just to even look at the data. Then how do you take it to that next level of visualization? And I really think that's going to be an important emerging area going forward. So like, for instance, we've been talking with the folks at Oxford about getting a surface there for collaborative visualization of cancer pathology. So that's a perfect example of where we can actually bring, again, Microsoft technologies towards trying to enable a particular science.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not just in this area, but in general, visualization is just sort of wide open. We are so underserved by our ability to make sense of complex data, large data.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, we have these really cool technologies. I think the World Wide Telescope is something that could be redeployed in a numerous types of environments, and I think healthcare is one of those killer applications. We were talking with the National Cancer Institute, and one of the things they'd like to do is, take a slice while the patient is still on the table out of the liver, and then be able to zoom in, and zoom out. It's the same technology that the World Wide Telescope has, but being able to do that real time with the patient, and then they know where to go inside of the liver to hunt down the various cancer cells.
Yeah, no, it's a similar kind of thing. And to the extent that in given fields we can, as you said, sort of standardize on what the data formats are and define a multidimensional data space, then we can indeed have browsers and viewers for those spaces. And that's, kind of what the telescope does in its domain, right? It creates a browser for a web of astronomy data. And, we need to have browsers for webs of genome data and all kinds of other scientific experimental data, all kinds.
Right. Yeah, I'm talking about the actual visual side of it, but then there's the whole way of, and I think this is really getting back towards that interfaces side of things, is how do you display this massive sets of data in a way that's understandable and usable by even the clinicians or the researchers themselves?
Yeah, yeah. And how do you represent the inputs and outputs of an experiment in a similarly understandable way.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a recent paper that was done by Bongshin Li, who's one of the people we've set up a collaboration between her and Case in Korea. And what she's done is this distance encoding tree. She calls it Detective, and it's a scalable visualization tool for mapping multiple traits onto evolutionary trees, which are very important for genomic information.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're trying to tackle it inside of Microsoft Research. What I was hoping to do is see more people outside of Microsoft Research so that we could start forming interesting collaborations in that particular area.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I hope that, among other things, I'll get a chance to follow up on some of these Phone Plus applications that you mentioned. Maybe talk to some of the people who are doing them, maybe even get some pictures or some videos of some of the things that they've built. That sounds really, really inspiring.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think that's the reason why I've gone into this area. It is inspiring, and it's not only is there corporate responsibility here, but I feel there's personal responsibility for me as well, and that's why I like working in this particular space. It's genuinely gratifying to be able to make a difference in an area that there's no question about is beneficial to society.
Well, good for you. You've landed in the perfect spot to do that, and it sounds like you're having a blast.
Yes, I am, and thank you very much.
Okay, well, thanks very much.